Welcome back to the Hemingway List. Oh, sit up straight. Andy, what are you doing? Oh, I was slouching so low just then. I was editing some photos that I took for a friend. And you know when you're working and you just slowly slouch lower and lower and lower and lower and lower? And then when I tried to use my microphone, I kind of realized that I was basically horizontal. We're talking about part 7, chapter 8 of Anna Karenina. Anna Karenina, as they pronounce it in Russia, I believe. Nice to explore the various nooks of the club. Which section of the club would you hang out in? Which character is most likely to become a Shliopik, which was a boiled egg that they used in a game that had been used too much in that game and was no longer good for playing that game because it was gooey and soft. Which character is most likely to become that? I would be in the couch section. I think, was there like a couch room? And I just imagined all like nice leather sofas, a Chesterfield, you know, but probably not because it's Russian, not, well, whatever that is, British, Italian, I don't know, what's a Chesterfield couch? That's got to be British, right? Anyway, that's what I'm imagining. But it would probably be more like Russian sofas, which would be probably more like French sofas with wooden bits and stuff. Anyway, couch. A couch is a couch. What am I talking about? We all know what a couch is. Anyway, I'd be in the couch section. I'd just be like sipping some nice whiskey or vodka, most likely, because it's Russia. I'm kind of twisting it into my own place that I want it to be, but still. I'll be there drinking the Shlivovitz, whatever they drink over there, vodka, and having a great time. I am a Norwegian, said, I love the servants and porters mysteriously knowing everything in the club. When Levin entered, he was told that his acquaintances were already inside, and when he left, it was somehow known exactly how much he owed. Yeah, that was a nice little detail. I liked this chapter. It was a really good setting. There's nothing like exploring a good setting, and I hope we get to spend more time in the club, but I don't feel like we will. Question one, which room? I'm Norwegian, says, I think I'd be circulating, having a couple of drinks, retreating to the reading nook, growing tired of that, and playing some games. I'm not much of a club guy, at least not modern clubs, but this sounds great. Yeah, if these places like this still existed, I'd be all about it, right? That'd be the best. But not really. Not really. The modern version is like your TAB, you know, sports club. Put a bet on and have a counter meal. It's not really for me. Question two, Stepan is prime Shliopik material for sure. Yeah, that was where my brain went to. Old Oblonsky. Prime Shliopik material. Simply Productive said, Ander, that's me, I just spat out my bloody hot chocolate during your podcast. Oh dear. I like your hair, but they have no teeth. Did I say that yesterday? What did I say that for? I'm glad I made you, I assume, laugh. Although you just said you spat out your hot chocolate. Maybe you spat it out in disgust. So, anyway. Ander says, Charlotte, that's me, I do and don't agree about positivity culture. Fake compliments can definitely feel bad. Oh, yeah, that's what we were talking about when I said I like your hair, but you have no teeth. Fake compliments can definitely feel bad. Oh, yeah, immediately after that saying that, oh, even as I was saying it, I was like, I don't even know what I'm saying right now. I didn't even think I agreed with what I was saying. I was just sort of trying to make a point, but yeah. I think what I said was stupid, but I'm not sure. I can't really remember exactly what I said. It was something about like if it's like a positive, if they make a point of positive, of being positive, then it's uncomfortable. Something like that. Fake compliments can definitely feel bad. I had a boss once who literally used a compliment sandwich for every piece of feedback he gave me. It got to the point where when he complimented me, I would flinch and wonder what I'd done wrong. I think the same thing is going on in your example of fake compliments, where everyone knows they're fake. Oh yeah, the compliment sandwich thing is so stupid. So stupid. That's a bad technique. And when people use it, you notice, don't you? You notice. They don't get away with it at all. They just look foolish. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. Yeah, compliments are funny. Fake compliments. I think the reason I don't like fake compliments is because I always think that real compliments are fake compliments. And I hate that feeling. I've got a real problem taking compliments. Like, especially about, like, my books or about anything creative I do. I'm not bothered because I'm such a creative person that I'll just keep churning things out, whether or not people like them. So it doesn't throw off my creativity. I'm not trying to brag that I'm so creative. I'm just saying, like, my personality type is such a creative personality type. So I'm always tinkering at something, building something, doing something like a podcast. I do this once a day, and that's just the cherry on the pie sort of thing. But it doesn't affect me kind of professionally, but at the same time, I just don't really believe compliments. People always say compliments, you know, they liked my book or well done on the podcast or whatever. I appreciate it, but it doesn't really, I don't really believe it, weirdly enough. Which is not good, because you just think, oh, they're just being nice. That's a nice thing to say, good on you. But I just think they're saying that to me because I'm me and I made the thing and they don't want to be rude. I read this bit, had the compliment sandwich. On the other hand, I have been part of communities that make an effort to be positive in some way, such as a body positivity, where the positivity usually feels genuine to me. And if nothing else, it can be nice to have a culture where people with negative thoughts feel pressure to keep them to themselves. I think when it goes well, people can give whatever genuine compliments come to mind without feeling awkward about it, rather than giving a fake compliment while thinking something insulting. Very good point. You got to train negative feelings out of yourself, don't you? I suffer from that really badly. I get into a habit of putting a negative slant on everything, you know? Or even to the point of, like, in a casual, fun conversation, my go-to is to sort of, like, pick things apart or complain about things, you know? Like, I'll watch a movie with someone and we'll then have a cuppa and talk about the movie, and I'll pick it apart rather than talk about which bits were awesome. Catch up with a friend and just happy, fun, have a beer together, whatever. But I will always sort of, like, you know, if they ask, oh, how's your business going? I'll tell them something bad that happened in the business, because that's what's been in my mind, you know? So I think what you're saying about training, what did you say? It can be nice to have a culture where people with negative thoughts feel pressure to keep them to themselves, for sure. Because it's something that, like, I want that myself. I want people to be like, hey, you're being negative again. And I'll kind of slap myself on the wrist and be like, yep, reset. What were we talking about? My business? Okay, what's something that's good that happened in my business? And, like, restart. That is good. That's what CBT training is, right? CBT, cognitive bias training. For people with, like, depression and stuff, they essentially just... The theory is your brain is just wired to be cynical, be negative, be, like, you know, distrusting or that kind of thing, or sort of always think the worst. You're just in negative thought patterns. and it's habitual, and you can't just sort of make a decision to stop. You actually need to train and rewire your brain, and it's like breaking an addiction almost. So you need to make a continuous effort to retrain. That's what CBT is. That's quite a legitimate therapy. Simply Productive said, definitely the reading nooks, and I would spend an absurd amount of time trying to see if the mafia operates out of there, knocking on walls, looking for fake entrances or secret compartments, barring that, making my own. I read a lot of Nancy Drew as a kid. It did give me that kind of feeling, not necessarily mafia, but like secret society. Like that building has secrets, right? There's stuff going on in the shadows, stuff going on behind the curtain, which I love. A really good setting. And about who would be the first, what's the word? Schleierpick? Simply Productive said, yeah, I'm with Levin. Oh, sorry, I'm with I Am Norwegian. Definitely Oblonsky. Yep. I think we can all agree. Levin could end up a Schleierpick. He could. Could see that happening. Also wondering if Levin will realize this, I like a little charade and not real life. What? This. Realize this. I like a little charade and not real life, and realize he'll be a bit socially awkward again as soon as he leaves. Oh, the place is like, oh, okay. The reason he doesn't feel awkward is because of where he is. It's not real. It's artificial. It is imposed. All right. Let's read a book, shall we? Gone off on a few tangents tonight. I hope you don't mind. I hope you don't mind that. Yesterday we had 1,033 downloads of the podcast. That's pretty good, isn't it? 1,000 we've had so far in... Oh, wait. I'm looking at my statistics page. In February, we had 12,700 downloads. Pretty good. Pretty good. Well done, guys. Thank you very much for listening. It's really cool. Sorry, I'm just loading up my thing here so I can continue this podcast. That. Okay, let's read chapter 9, which is on paper. I didn't really have to load that up now, I suppose. But let's read it. The Oblonsky carriage. The Oblonsky carriage, shouted the hall porter in a stern bass. The carriage drove up and they got in. Only for the first few moments while they were leaving the courtyard of the club did Levin retain that sense of club calm, pleasure and undoubted decorum in his surroundings, but as soon as the carriage had passed out into the street and he felt it jolting on the uneven road, heard the angry shouts of the Ivs Vozstik they met, saw in the ill-lit street the red signboards of a vodka dealer and a small shop, the sense was dissipated, and he began to consider his actions and to ask himself whether he was doing right in going to see Anna. What would Kitty say? But Oblonsky would not let him reflect, and as if guessing his doubts, tried to dispel them. "How glad I am that you will make her acquaintance," said he. "Do you know, Dolly has long wished it, and Lvov called on her and goes to see her, though she is my sister," Oblonsky continued. "I may safely say that she is a remarkable woman. Well, you'll see. Her position is a very trying one, especially just now." "Why especially just now?" "We are negotiating with her husband about a divorce. He agrees, but there are difficulties about their son and the affair, which should have been ended long ago. He has already been dragging on for 3 months. As soon as she gets the divorce, she will marry Vronsky. How stupid that old ceremony is, walking round and round singing Rejoice, Isaiah, a ceremony in which nobody believes and which stands in the way of people's happiness," interpolated Oblonsky. "Well, and then their position will be as definite as yours or mine." "What is the difficulty?" asked Levin. "Oh, that's a long and tiresome story. Everything is so indefinite in this country. But the point is that she has been living for several weeks in Moscow, where everybody knows her and him, awaiting the divorce, without going out anywhere or seeing any women except Dolly. because, you understand, she does not want people to come and see her as a charity. Even that fool Princess Barbara has left her, considering it improper. Well, you see, any woman in her position might fail to find resources in herself, but she, you'll see how she has arranged her life, how quiet and dignified she is. To the left in the side street opposite the church, shouted Oblonsky, leaning out of the carriage window. Four, how hot, he said, throwing his already unfastened overcoat, still wider open in spite of the 12 degrees of frost. The footnote says, in Russia, the Rohmur thermometer is used. 12 degrees of frost equals 5 Fahrenheit below zero. Oh, that's cold. But she has a child. I suppose she is occupied with her, said Levin. I think you see in every woman only a female, un corvus, a broody hen. Necessarily occupied with children, if at all, said Oblonsky. No, I believe Anna is bringing her up splendidly, but one does not hear about her. Her occupations are, firstly, writing. I can see you smiling sarcastically, but you are wrong. She is writing a children's book and does not speak of it to anyone. But she read it to me, and I showed the manuscript to Voyakiv, you know, the publisher. He writes himself, I think. That was my phone going ding, by the way, not yours. He is an expert and says it is a remarkable work. But you think she is a woman author? Not at all. She is, first of all, a woman with a heart, you see. She now has a little English girl and a whole family she is interested in. Why, is it a philanthropic undertaking? There you are, at once looking out for something bad. It's not philanthropic, it's kind-heartedness. They had, I mean Vronsky had, an English trainer, a master in his own line, but a drunkard. He took completely to drink, but got delirium tremens, and has deserted his family. She saw them, helped them, and became interested in them, and now the whole family is on her hands, and she doesn't do it patronizingly, just with money. But she herself coaches the boys in Russian from the high school. And she has taken the girl into the house, but you'll see her. The carriage drove into the courtyard and Oblonsky rang loudly at the front door, before which a sledge was standing. Without asking the porter who opened the door whether Anna was in, Oblonsky entered the hall. Levin followed, and more in doubt as to whether he was acting well or badly. Glancing in the mirror, Levin saw that he was red in the face, but he was sure he was not tipsy, and he followed Oblonsky up the carpeted stairs. On the top landing, a footman bowed to Oblonsky, as to someone he knew well, and Oblonsky, asking who was with Anna Arkadyevna, received the answer that it was Mr. Vorkyov. Where are they? In the study. Passing through a small dining room paneled in dark wood, Oblonsky and Levin entered the study across the soft carpet. It was lit by a lamp with a large dark shade. Another reflector lamp fixed to the wall illuminated a large full-length portrait of a woman which attracted Levin's involuntary attention. It was Anna's portrait, painted in Italy by Mikhailov. While Oblonsky passed behind a screen of trellis work and the man's voice that had been speaking became silent, Levin looked at the portrait, which in the bright illumination seemed to step out of its frame, and he could not tear himself away from it. He forgot where he was, and without listening to what was being said, gazed fixedly at the wonderful portrait. It was not a picture, but a living and charming woman with curly black hair, bare shoulders and arms, and a dreamy half-smile on lips covered with elegant down, looking at him victoriously and tenderly with eyes that troubled him. The only thing that showed she was not alive was that she was more beautiful than a living woman could be. "I'm so glad," he heard a voice saying nearby, evidently addressing him. The voice of the very woman whom he had admired in the portrait. Anna had come out from behind the screen to meet him, and Levin saw in the dim light of the study the woman of the portrait in a dark dress of different shades of blue, not in the same attitude, not with the same expression, but on the same height of beauty as that on which the artist had caught her in the portrait. In reality, she was less brilliant, but there was something about her new and attractive which was not in the portrait. Oh, there we go, another chapter down. Anna, looking good, apparently. have your say about this chapter over at the subreddit. Thanks very much for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.